Welcome, everybody. I'm going to go ahead and get this started. My name is Shane, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Shane.
Welcome to the home group panel at the 18th annual, Arizona State Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. Please help me open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization. Institution does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The anonymity statement is, out of respect for our anonymity, please do not take photographs during the meetings at ASCUPA. Taking of photos during AA meetings makes any members uncomfortable about the confidentiality of the gathering. Also, please be considerate when taking photographs around conference venues. Take care that you do not capture images of AA members, family members, and friends who did not give permission and may not wish to appear in published pictures. You may interview us, our friends, but our full names and our pictures as AA members cannot be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Please do not post recognizable photos of identifiable AA members on news websites. Whatever the medium, no disclosure of a member's affiliation with AA can be made by anyone but the individual. Here to read an excerpt from the Grapevine book titled The Home Group, Heartbeat of AA, help me welcome Rachel.
Hi, my name is Rachel. I'm a truly grateful alcoholic.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Why have a home group? And this is from September 1986. In a recent letter to a member of the fellowship, a member of the General Service Office staff referred to the home group as the heartbeat of AA. That made a big impression on me, and I believe that just as surely as we are aware of, sensitive to, and in need of our own heartbeat, each of us needs a home group. It all began in the home group, didn't it? Not all of us readily identified that mysterious group of people who were trying to help us get sober as our home group. In fact, I am painfully aware that the commitment to become a part of anything escapes many in the early stages of recovery. Most members of the fellowship will never have the rewarding experience of attending a general service conference. Only a few are even touched by our area assemblies, state and national conventions, and other functions which bring members together from many home groups. Even the district functions might be attended by only a small portion of the membership of the groups involved. To many, their AA is only the home group. If this is so, why should the home group be to the member, and why should a member have a home group? When we took those first faltering steps to recovery, many of us would have stumbled and fallen once again if we had to make what was to be a miraculous change by ourselves. In my case, the first rays of hope came from those sometimes loving, sometimes cantankerous old geezers who sat around the table in my home group. A long time before I believed or even heard what they told me, I began thinking there might be a chance simply because I thought if they could do it, so could I. The first slogans I heard came from them. Later, when I heard the same things from speakers at a convention, I thought it was so wise, but it was months before I realized that I first heard those thoughts from the fat little guy who I thought was so windy and who eventually became my sponsor. In fact, after I got into service work, I thought I needed to go to conventions, assemblies, and forums to get my batteries recharged because things were so dull and routine in my home group. Now I know that it's not the wonderful people I've met throughout these great lands who have helped keep me sober most of the time, but those wonderful people sitting around the table in my hometown who loved me when I could not love, who waited for me to quit lying, who tolerated me when I would be part of nothing, and who never asked me to leave when I was obnoxious. Because of their love and patience, I was able finally to get outside of myself and make some sort of a commitment to the group. It seems to me that, in the beginning, a home group is the most... I'm sorry, I'm in denial that I don't need glasses. A home group is all most of us can possibly handle. It's where we first find a sponsor, where someone first sees that we get a big book, where we first see the steps on the wall, where we learn again to pray, and where we first begin to recover. Remember the heartbeat? But most of all, because of the trust that develops through the meetings of a home group, it is where we might first begin to care about someone else so that we might eventually begin to love again, both in AA and among our friends and family. It is where we first learn to take responsibility so that we might eventually take responsibility for our lives. In my case, that began with the simple chore of cleaning out ashtrays. How wise that they knew I could do no more. It was there we learned to do 12-step work so that we could eventually pass on to others what was so freely given to us, thereby assuring the very future and survival of the fellowship. It was there we first learned about the rest of the fellowship, and someone began answering the questions about all the mysteries of what makes the whole thing work. Oh yes, the home group is the heartbeat of the fellowship. There are many reasons why the fellowship needs these wonderful groups, and there are many reasons why the groups need each and every member running through their life veins. But most important, we need our home groups. That's where it all began, and it's where it will all end for us. Yes, all of us have also had the job of burying some of those people who passed the recovery program onto each of us. With this week at the conference, this phase of my service to the fellowship, of paying back a small measure of my gratitude, begins to wind down. What will I do now? If I am very, very lucky, those who are doing such a marvelous job of serving the fellowship in my home group might, just might, allow me to make coffee next week and maybe even talk to a drunk. R.B. Michel, Missouri.
Thank you very much, Rachel. Please have a seat. Welcome, guys. Help me welcome Louie, who's going to be reading the 12 traditions.
And my name is Louie. I'm an alcoholic. All right, the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Tradition number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Tradition three, the only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized. But we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you, Louie. Our first speaker is from Casa Grande, and please welcome Stan.
My name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. My sobriety date is February 11th of 2000, and for that I'm very grateful. I came into the room first time. I had no idea what a home group was, but the people in that room grabbed a hold of me. And they loved me until I could love myself, just like I said in that reading. I didn't know what they were doing. They grabbed me. They gave me a hug. They welcomed me into the rooms. And I was you guys' age. I was really young, you know. And they got to know my name. And when I would come in there, they'd call me by name. That was huge to me. You know what I mean? I'd burned all my bridges when I got here. Anyway, I stuck around, and then I got my first bit of 12-step work, and that was sitting in a chair so that when somebody else came along, they saw me sitting in the chair. Because when I got there, there was a lot of you guys sitting in the chair, and I felt like I was in the right place. Anyway, I moved to Arizona. This was in Texas, and I relapsed. I didn't get involved in the program when I got out here, and got caught up in my own bullshit. Stopped off at the bar one day. It was a Tuesday, and it was a good day at work, and no other reason. The sun was shining, and I stopped off and decided I could have just one. And I went on a 5-year run, drugs and felonies and everything else was involved, and I went to prison. And that's where I found my second home group. And those guys, the same thing. They grabbed a hold of me. They loved me until I could learn to love myself. I got a sponsor in that room. He took me through the 12 steps in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was able to stay sober. And I got to be the next guy to welcome the new guy. And I got to be the next guy to take somebody else through the steps and stay sober because of this program. I got out of there, went to a halfway house in Phoenix. Rode a bunch of buses all over town to work. Never rode the bus before, and that was an experience. And I got another home group, and it was a book study. My sponsor always told me, go to book studies, because if you learn the big book, you'll know when people are full of shit, when they're talking out of the side of their neck or if they're really talking program. So I've always been involved in book studies. My home group is a book study. And me and this buddy of mine, drugs is part of my story, okay? I choose to be an Alcoholics Anonymous because it took a long time for me to figure out I was an alcoholic, and ever since I admitted to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, I've never had to pick up drugs or alcohol again since. But we were told by one of my sponsees about this Nazi AA meeting that we had to go to because if you said anything about drugs, they would throw you out. So me and this buddy of mine, he had about 5 years and I had about 6 years and we were going to go over there and straighten these people out. And we went over there and it was a closed AA meeting. And that's why you couldn't talk about drugs and that's why you couldn't say you're an addict. And we didn't understand. We had never been to a closed AA meeting. But we kept going back trying to, you know, we were going to fix them. But ended up, we learned a lot and I made that my home group. Those people grabbed a hold of me and they taught me what it says in the big book. They explained a lot of things to me that I didn't know. And they got me involved in service. And that's when I took my first GSR position. And I started going to the assemblies. And I learned a whole lot more about AA. And the reason, when I first came into rooms, they told me that 25% of the people in AA do 75% of the work. And I didn't want to be a slacker. I wanted to be in the 25% though. So I got this commitment as a GSR, and I started going to the assemblies, and there was a bunch of really old fuddy-duddies there, and they wanted to run AA their way. So I thought, I'll bring some youngness into this, and I'll teach them something. And, of course, that didn't work out so good either, but I did. I over the years, I've been sober for 10 years, and over the years I've picked up some sponsees, and they have become GSRs of their home group. And they go to the assemblies with me. And now it's a lot, there's a lot more young people at the assembly. So we are getting a voice in the assembly now. And I'm getting, you know what I mean, I'm getting old myself. So I'm not really young like I was when I started doing it. But it's still, to me, I feel like I'm younger than the 50 and 60 and 70 year old people. So I can still bring a little bit of young into there. Anyway, and that's what the home group did for me. You know, it got me into becoming a service and being a part of AA on the next level. You know, and Those people, I'm going to tell you guys this. I came into the rooms to get sober, and I accomplished that. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. The obsession to drink has been lifted, but I keep coming back to AA to learn how to live life. Two or three of my spiritual advisors are sitting in the audience right now, people that have a lot of sobriety that give me direction and guidance where I'm going. In my home group, always, there's always people in there with more experience than me, and I'm always learning. I've told people this before. When I stop learning, I might as well go home or go to the bar and drink, because if I can't continue to learn, I want to get to the next level, you know? I have my own company now, which is amazing, and I'm learning from, I'm telling you this, my home group in Glendale, before I moved to Casa Grande, my very best friend, we were both members of the same home group, we went to meetings together for a solid year, and I didn't even talk to the guy. After a year's time, we kept watching each other and seeing each other working, really working a program. And he had a position, and I had a position. And finally, we started talking, and I never thought I would want to play golf. But this guy taught me how to play golf, and I'm pretty good at it. I like it. It's fun. You know, I never thought when I was younger, I thought, golf, that's old people's sport. You know what I mean? But it's fun. I actually have fun when I get out there. He taught me how to do that. Another guy in my home group taught me how to get incorporated when I started my company. I didn't know how to run a company. I didn't know what to do. You know, somebody else, people just in my home group, people that I've hung out with, and you go to the probably the most important thing for me with the home group is you're accountable. You know, if you join a home group, people at the home group don't see you at the meeting. They're calling you. They want to know if you're okay, what's going on. You know, I'm at my home group meeting every week. I have a couple of inpatient places that I take meetings to, and I don't miss those, because it's my commitment. But my home group, I don't miss it because it's my commitment. I go to other meetings, you know what I mean? But I don't, those meetings I do not miss. My home group meeting, I don't miss. And if I do miss it, there's two or three people on the home group list that are calling me. One thing that my home group in Glendale did, on the list of, you know, everybody in the home group, they had your birthday on there. And when it was your birthday, they would pass around a birthday card, and you'd get a birthday card. And that was really kind of exciting. I like that, too. I'm trying to get that incorporated in my new home group in Casa Grande. But I don't know. You guys, I love my home group. I'm glad I'm a part of a home group. And when my very first meeting that I went to, there was 80 people in the room, and they were all telling me stuff, giving me suggestions and stuff on how to stay sober. And I wasn't hearing any of it. You know, I had such a whirlwind of bullshit going on in my mind at the time. But somebody told me, keep coming back. And that's the only thing I got. Somebody got through to me. They gave me a hug. They told me their name. And they said, keep coming back. And I kept coming back. And as I came back, the fog cleared. You know, you guys that are really young in here, I'm really happy for you that you're here at this age. You know, if I could have stayed sober at your age when I first came into the rooms, I'd have 20 years. You know what I mean? But I don't. The best thing too, another good thing I should say, everything's the best thing with me. Another good thing too, they loved me until I could love myself. When I first came into the rooms, I couldn't stay sober. And every time I came back, those same people, the home group members, would grab a hold of me and welcome me back, grab a hold of me, give me a 24-hour chip. And they would just keep loving me. You know, and I didn't understand it at the time. But now I'm the guy at the home group. I'm able to give back what was freely given to me. I'm the guy at the home group that grabs a hold of the newcomer and asks them their name and tell them my name. And I introduce them to a couple of people. Because that was important to me. Probably the most important thing in my sobriety was those people that grabbed a hold of me when I first got here. They introduced themselves to me. They wanted to know my name. When I came back, they would call me by name. That was cool. I liked that. I'm really glad you guys let me share.
Let's invite Brandon up as our speaker for you here from Tucson.
Thank you, sir. am an alcoholic. My name is Brendan. And I'm not from Tucson, but I'm from the Phoenix area. I'm from Chandler, Arizona. And, you know, thanks, Stan, for your share. I appreciated that. I love when people start talking about their home group. I had an opportunity to speak on a panel this year at the International Convention of Young People in AA, and it was about the home group as well. And something coincidental about this phone call is Tim called me and said, hey, come on out and speak on the home group. And I'm like, what is this? What's going on? I keep getting asked to speak about the home group. But I love my home group, and I have a home group today. It's the Sunset Group. We meet Mondays and Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Monday nights is a closed big book study. Tuesday nights is an open discussion meeting. And if you're in the Tempe area or near University and Mill, right in the heart of Tempe, right next to City Hall, actually, is the White Little People Church. Come on in at 6 o'clock on a Monday or Tuesday. We'll be happy to have you there. And, you know, the Sunset Group hasn't been my home group since I got sober. My sobriety date is January 5th of 1996. And my first home group was the Dearborn Heights group in Dearborn, Michigan. And that group saved my life. Those people in that group saved my life. And I truly believe that, you know, if I hadn't found that group, I might still be out there or dead or, in an asylum or somewhere else, you know. A little bit of background history on me is I started my drinking early, 10, 11, 12 years old. I was drinking mostly, you know, on the weekend and whatnot, and slowly as it progressed, as I got into my later teens and early 20s, my drinking got to the point where I was drinking during the weekdays. Didn't matter what day. Any day that ended in Y would be my day. And I sat out there, and, you know, a lot of times I had a lot of justifications for my drinking or the way I was. And I'd point to, you know, if you had a family upbringing that I had, or, you know, if you had, the pressures I have, you know, so great a pressure, but I'd point to things that were good in my life, too. Like, I had a scholarship to college, and I thought, well, you know, what alcoholic in their right mind could have a scholarship to college? And I thought, you know, I'm different. I'm not like those people. And I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 13. I was put in a treatment center where they brought AA meetings in on Friday nights. So I learned early on about Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 13. There's a lot of probably the same messages I hear in my home group today, I hear it at that meeting. I chose to not listen and, you know, thought that this is great for you guys, but not so much for me, and I'm on my way. And I stayed out drinking and in denial of that I was an alcoholic for years, you know, and a lot of the things that they told me, the truth, when I was out there, I remember whenever I'd get in trouble as a teenager, my mom was a great Al-Anon. She was, she would take me to, an open AA discussion meeting, and it would be an open speaker, something like this, and this person would give their story for 45 minutes, and at the end of the meeting, they'd hand out cakes for anniversaries, and the person's sponsor would get up there, say a couple nice words about them, and give them a cake, and a hug, and their chip, and, their token, and it was special. It was neat. But I really didn't care for it between 13 and 18. Every time, though, those were conditions. If I wanted to come back and live in their household after being gone on a binge for a few days, the conditions were I go to AA meeting. And I went to those AA meetings, and I related at times to some of the speakers they brought up there. I related to some of the messages I heard. But then again, I had that, you know, but I'm different. You know, I'm not like you guys. And they suggested, getting a home group a lot in those meetings and getting a sponsor. And I balked at that for a lot of years. I mean, it took me two drunk drivings, one when I was 21 and the second one, and hopefully the last one when I was 22 years old. And I went to the before that sentencing of that second drunk driving, I knew what to do. I'd been through this rigmarole before. I started going to AA meetings because I know that's what the judges are going to want to see. They're going to want to see that court slip with, you know, with a bunch of AA meetings on it and show that I've been going or something like that. And, you know, I got a lawyer for, and, you know, I did all the things I was supposed to do and or I thought I was supposed to do. And I didn't tell my parents because they didn't want to know anymore. My drinking got to the point where they asked me not to call them from jail anymore. They said, please, don't call us. We're not going to bail you out. So better to use that dime or whatever, call on somebody else. And I called my a guy that supplied me with some drugs and a place to stay once in a while so I could drink the way I like to drink. And, you know, he bailed me out and promptly followed me right over to the ATM so I can hand him back that money. That's how far people could trust me. They could keep me in the, you know, arm's length because they couldn't trust me. If I was like, yeah, I'll pay you back later tomorrow, they were like, yeah, no, this is now. It's going to happen. So those are the kind of people, the lower friends that we talk about in these rooms that I started to hang around with. And it was the, you know, I started going to the meetings I knew of, the meetings in my neighborhood that my mom had taken me to when, you know, whenever I got in trouble. So I started going to the Dearborn Heights meeting here in Dearborn, Michigan, and I started, you know, I asked my mom after that second drunk driving if I could go with her to that meeting. She said, yes, of course. I was beaming inside, I'm sure. And maybe this is the time he stays sober. And I went into that meeting, and there's a guy speaking. His name was Joe M. And Joe, he told my story. Joe was 36 years old, and I was 22. And now I look at it now, and I just turned 37, and it feels like an eon ago. But, Joe was 36, and he told my story, but he had a lifetime experience so different from me. But I related to the feelings that he was talking about from his heart. And that's what I related to. And he talked about the importance of having a sponsor and the importance of having a home group. And I went to some meetings. I was probably going to about 5 or 6 meetings a week. And then when I finally got sentenced and I luckily, you know, stayed out of jail, the laws weren't as strict, you know, 15 years ago as they are today. But, you know, I stayed out of jail, luckily. Forgot to mention that my cousin was the prosecutor, so that kind of helped a little bit. But he said that the judge, a little bit, but I will say this, the judge was a recovering alcoholic. And she told me right from the bench, she goes, this is your second time here. She goes, you know that there's AA meetings in my chambers every Monday night. If you want to know where an AA meeting is, you show up here. And that judge showed me straight from the bench. She knew me. She saw right through me, all the BS I had, everything like that. And she knew me. And I went to that meeting a few times. And, you know, I still thought that these suggestions that they talk about, getting a sponsor, getting a home group, were just suggestions, you know. They work for some people, but I was different, like, you know. I don't need all these suggestions. But I went to some AA meetings and I met some people and they stuck their hand out to me. They welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was almost like, you know, I was like, yeah, it's nice to meet you, but I'm different, you know. And I went back to I kept people at an arm's length distance away from me. I kind of went to the meetings right before they started. I left right at the end of them. I didn't stick around before the meeting. I didn't go to the meeting after the meeting. These are the things I didn't know because I wasn't sticking around for it. And eventually, you know, someone was on to my game and they pulled me aside and said, well, why don't you come out for coffee with us? And there's someone from my home group and I didn't have a home group yet and they invited me out and they were very friendly. I thought this might work. I can relate to these people and they're much like me. They're not any different, you know, and I gave them a little bit of a chance for the first time in my life. I gave other people a chance to get inside and let them know who I was and what I am. I kept going to meetings, still didn't have a sponsor, didn't have a home group. This went on for 6 months. And I picked up a drink about 6 months later, after that second drunk driving, after going to meetings 5-6 days a week. And so that's, you know, one thing I like to talk about is, you know, AA, going to meetings is not, you know, keep me sober. I need to work the program Alcoholics Anonymous that's outlined in this book Alcoholics Anonymous. So I need to continuously work this program, and I appreciate what you had to say, Stan, about, you know, going to a home group that has a big book study. I believe in that too. I go to a meeting that we read out of this book. I mean, a lot of the stuff I say is, you know, in some sense, probably, you know, I can say it much better than how it's put in here. You know, sometimes I mimic some of the stuff that's in here and talk from the microphone about it or talk in my home group about it. And these are the things that help keep me sober a day at a time. It's also taught me how to live life, and I had those same experiences that Stan had about people in my home group assisting me and cleaning up my act and getting out there in the real world and getting a real job. And that, you know, when I came in here, I got that first 6 months of continuously going to AA meetings, I learned, you know, about honesty. That was, you know, I got that drilled home. And probably about 4 months into it, I quit that job that I was billing that company for like 60 hours a week and only working about 10 hours a week. And I had to get honest. I was like, I feel like a piece of crap, and I feel like, you know, I'm lying to these people. And I remember giving my notice to the president of the company. He's like, you know, we really miss you. You always got a job here, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, if you only knew. I was thinking in the back of my head, if you only knew how bad I, you know, got over on you guys and how badly I just built money out of your company. And I didn't do anything. And amends came later for that, but that does say it happened. And I went to, I got this new job. I thought it was the greatest thing. First Friday paycheck. Went out to the bar with, you know, it was the guy's position who I was taking. He was getting another job in a different company. I thought it would be the right thing to go to the bar, wish him goodbye. I started off drinking Diet Coke, I swear to God. Started drinking Diet Coke, and before I knew it, there were Bud Lights in my hand, and I didn't know how they got there. And I was going, how did this happen again? I remember driving home that night down the Southfield Freeway in Detroit going, how did this happen again? I'm drunk again. I went in with the full intention of going to an 8 o'clock AA meeting that Friday night. Didn't make it to the meeting, and, you know, that's what happens with me. You put alcohol in this body, I had that phenomenon of craving kicks in, and I'm off to the races. I can't tell you if it's going to turn out into blackout, pass out. It's probably going to be one of those two, most likely, but I can't tell you where it's going to lead and where I'm going to end up, whose bedroom I'm going to end up, whose, you know, house I'm going to end up at, whose floor, who knows. And, I know for me that, you know, driving home on that Southfield Freeway that night, I never felt lower in my life. I felt like I hit a bottom that it was just that internal bottom. You know, nobody is saying anything to me. It was all in here in the heart. And I remember an old-timer. His name is Hugh. Hugh's since passed on, but he used to be one of these guys in my home group. He said, he'd sit at those meetings with me and say, the longest journey is from the head to the heart. And, you know, for a while there, during those first 6 months, I started believing that I was an alcoholic, but a little bit. I could rationalize it up here in my head, but it took a long time for it to sink into my heart, so I really truly believed it with every ounce of the fiber in my body that I was truly an alcoholic. And I think that night, my last drink, proved to me that I can't drink successfully. No matter how hard I try, how well I plan out my day and schedule it, I'm an alcoholic. So I went 20 days after this last drink with going to AA meetings but not telling anybody I picked up a drink. And for us, it's like a ticking time bomb. And I finally, this old-timer Hugh, he told me, hey, come here, I gotta introduce you to this guy. His name is Brandon. And Brandon's, you know, he's got 3 drunk drivings. He's much, much worse than you. And he needs rides to AA meetings now because he's completely lost his license. So I said, well, yeah, you know, no problem. I'll give him a ride. I'm like, yeah, I am pretty good, aren't I? And I gave this guy my pager number because back then we didn't have cell phones. We had the pagers. I was lucky even to have a pager. I worked for a company that provided me one. So I had the pager, and he would page me. And then when I was late picking him up, he put his number in there, 911, like, hurry up. And I remember that. This was some of my first service commitments, that old-timer got me involved in picking this guy up and taking him to AA meetings. And one of these AA meetings we were driving to was just happened to be that Monday night inside the courthouse that I was telling you about. Well, we just happened to show up at that courthouse, and I told him when we were in the parking lot, I don't have a sponsor, I don't have a home group, and I picked up a drink 20 days ago. This guy's about 60 days sober, and he goes, that's all right, you can get one tonight. And thank God for that. Thank God for that guy. I went into that meeting. I asked that guy, Joe, to be my sponsor. He said, of course. He goes, and I'm like, what do you want me to do? He's like, all right, tomorrow, I want you to meet me at the Dearborn Heights meeting at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock? I thought that's an 8:30 meeting. He said, yeah, exactly. 6 o'clock at that meeting. You're going to help me set that meeting up. We're going to make coffee, and then we're going to go start working through this book, Alcoholics Anonymous, together. That's what happened. I met him there at 6 o'clock. Probably took us 15 minutes to set up this meeting, and we spent the rest of the time in this book reading from the cover right on through. And I owe Joe and a lot of people at that home group a debt of gratitude today, because they've given me the life I have today. When I moved out here, I was 10 years sober. It was about 5 years ago. And I came out here, and I knew two people in the whole state. Actually, one of them is speaking here tomorrow about 1 o'clock, so I'm going to catch him. He lives in California now, so I don't get to see him much. But I knew, like, three people. And I knew them all, three young people in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to these conventions all over the country. And I met these guys, and my home group back in Detroit, we met on Sundays and Tuesdays. And on Wednesdays, we used to go over to one of our home group members' house, and we go watch a TV show that came on every Wednesday night. I'm not going to give it props or anything like that. We would watch it every Wednesday night, and we have dinner together. We do a lot of hanging out together. And the woman of the house, Christine, she encouraged me to call somebody down here in Arizona, a friend of hers, so when I got down here, that he could take me to meetings. And I used to go over to their house every Wednesday, and she used to ring this guy up who was in Arizona. His name was Chuck, and I'd met Chuck before. She put that phone in my ear, and this is Chuck. Give him, talk to him. He wants to go take you to meetings. You're going there Wednesday, right? So, like, next Wednesday, you need to go to meetings with them, you know. And she put that phone. And I'm just 10 years sober, and she put that phone in my ear. And I got to meet Chuck when I first flew out here and came down. He took me to some his home group. He took me to some other meetings. And, my sponsor back home suggested that I go to 30 meetings in 30 days when I first moved down here and, find a home group that's right for me and it's going to work with my schedule for work and for whatever job I end up having and my, time schedule and whatnot that I can get there on a regular basis. And so I went to 30 meetings in 30 days when I moved down here, and I have what today is my second home group, which is the Sunset Group. And some of the things I look at for a home group today that I appreciate is one that they use the material here that is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they use these books here and other literature, AA-approved literature, in the meeting. And then the other thing I like about my meeting is that they greet me when I come to the door. They greet the new person coming in off the street. I appreciate that. I felt welcomed. I felt a part of the meeting even started, I felt a part of. They showed me where the coffee was, where I could get a cup of coffee or whatnot, and I felt at home. Those are the kind of things I look for in a home group. I also look for a place that I can find service commitments in, and that's outside of the group. I try to find... there's service in the group, like coffee making, which I did when I was first sober, and chairing the meeting and stuff like that. But there's also service commitments we do as a group, and we take meetings into treatment centers so we can reach the new alcoholic, the person that has yet to find Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what we do. We do that every Saturday morning. So for me, those are some key, things. If you're looking for a home group and you're new to this program, Alcoholics Anonymous, first of all, welcome. Second of all, please get a home group right away, and then find yourself a sponsor right away, too. Something that just stuck out to me is it's kind of funny that Tim was walking. I was sitting in here early. I was a little on time, which is rare for me. And Tim came in here, and he was, hey, you got this book, The Home Group, The Heartbeat of AA, in my hand. He thought it was his copy. He's like, can I have that back? I'm like, no, this is my copy. I brought it. And it was kind of funny that you guys made that, you know, Riley read that portion, I think it was, or, no, I'm sorry, Rachel. Getting confused. But you read that portion. I read that this morning when I was kind of, you know, thinking about speaking this afternoon, and I was getting, you know, my day started, having a cup of coffee. I read that same part, and I thought that was kind of neat that you guys started off with that. But one of the things that, you know, I wanted to also read that, it caught my eye too, is it's about this kind of the founding members, editors put this book together, and they it's basically different letters that were sent into the grapevine, and it talks about their experiences. You know, it's something that you can read about. AA members can discover how other groups set up meetings, help newcomers, and make themselves a service to AA at large. This is the purpose kind of this book right here. I think that's a great thing. Anytime where we could share our experience of how we could better reach the newcomer or maybe change our meeting around. I know we just went through it in my home group. We changed the format around. We're changing some things up. We want to, you know, generate some life in this thing and this program. And the other thing I like to read is from the, real quick, is from the foreword to the second edition. I'll close with this. You know what? Since the foreword, this is the foreword to the second edition. Since the foreword to this book was written in 1939, a wholesale miracle has taken place. I don't like the short say. It's a wholesale miracle. It's an unbelievable miracle in my life. Our earliest printing voiced the hope that every alcoholic who journeyed to find the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at his destination already continues the early text. Two, threes, and five of us have sprung up in other communities. You know, this was written back in 1955, and I still see it today, you know, where new meetings start, and you know what, I truly believe Alcoholics Anonymous is still growing. I mean, we're losing a lot of people too, but if this is your first AA meeting or your first AA convention, I welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I invite you to stay. You know, I was in and out from 13 to 22, and yet it doesn't have to be that bad. You don't have to stay out there that long. You can stay. And thank you for letting me share. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon, for this guy I know is from Tucson. It's my pleasure to introduce Sam.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sam. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Sam.
And I'd like to thank the committee for having me come out. I appreciate Tim asking me to come and speak to you about home groups. Tim is in my home group, so he and I have been around for the last few years. My home group is the Happy Destiny group, and it is the best group in Tucson. And they meet Thursday evening, 6 o'clock, at the St. James Methodist Church. It's an open meeting. All are welcome. And we work out of the AA literature. So that's the AA Big Book, 12 and 12, and the other literature that is conference approved. My sobriety date is June 28, 1988. And like Brendan from Chandler, not Tucson, I also went to my first meetings at age 13 and was not ready to get sober yet, so I went out and did my thing until I was 22, so he and I about the same ages of getting sober. Now I do want to share a little bit of sad news. In my hometown, Philadelphia, the police found a 6-year-old wandering the street. You know, it was late, and the police asked the 6-year-old, you know, where do you live, you know, where's your mom? And the 6-year-old said, you know, I don't want to go home, my mom beats me. And so the police said, well, what about your dad? And the 6-year-old said, well, my dad beats me too. So they asked him, so the police asked this 6-year-old, all right, well, you know, where do you want to go? You know, who do you want to live with? And the 6-year-old said, the Dallas Cowboys, because they don't beat anybody. So I say that joke, one, because it's funny as hell to me, being from Philadelphia. But two, it kind of illustrates that, you know, I've been in Tucson now since the early 90s, but I've never not called Philadelphia my home. So I've always had that. That's my home, my hometown. Now, of course, I root for the Cardinals as well as the Eagles, but, you know, depending on who's doing better. But it's still my home. I don't remember what exactly it was like when I was 13 and went to my first AA meeting. I was a daily drinker, drug addict by that point, by age 13. But I will tell you that I spent the next 9 years trying to prove I was not an alcoholic. So I was pretty beat up physically, mentally, spiritually by the time I finally had my last drunk. It was actually June 26th, but I think it actually took me 2 days to sober up before I would consider my sobriety date. So I was physically beaten up. I had stitches in my mouth, and my head was swollen, and my hip was hurt, and I had a broken wrist. And I went to my first AA meeting. I was in the Air Force, and I knew that I was in trouble because I had been arrested by the police. I'd tried to bite an off-duty cop's thumb off. You know, this is my last drunk. Really, you know, put that on a billboard. So that's how I was coming back to AA. I was always trying to prove that I was that I could control this. I was always finding lesser companions to hang out with to find that connection. And I was lonely. I always felt like I was outside looking in. And so when I was beat up, I was feeling physically ill, and I found out from the base hospital where the AA meetings were, and on base they met Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And Tuesday and Thursday were closed meetings. Saturday was an open meeting. And I went to my first meeting. It was that Tuesday after my drunk, and it was in Germany. And it was, even though it was June, it was still kind of chilly out. And I just remember the feeling that I had as soon as I crossed over the threshold. And there was a woman there, and she, about my age, her name was Sean B., and she was setting up the meeting. And I was a little bit early. I think I was one of the first people there besides her. And she said, "Hey, come on in. Welcome. Glad you're here. Have some coffee and some cookies, and you know, we'll get started at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, whatever it was." And I just remember that feeling of being there and feeling like I crossed the threshold of this, you know, out of the rain and wind and cold to this warm, welcoming environment. And that was my first real exposure to my home group. It was that feeling of belonging and that acceptance. And I followed their the suggestions. I don't, you know, really remember specifics about who said what or whatever, but I just remember them saying, you know, if you do what we do, if you go where we go, you will have what we have. And this woman, Sean, had 4 years of sobriety, and I was like, oh, I will never have 4 years of sobriety. Because I had just tried everything in the book, and you know, some of the things that are not in the book on trying to control my drinking, I was hopeless. But yet, Sean had 4 years. So I kept coming back. And I, like was previously said, you know, we get in the car. This was in Germany, and we were pretty remote. So we would get in the car on the weekends and go to other bases and go to their meetings, because we just loved AA so much. I remember my first conference was on a Canadian military base in Lahr, Germany, and I just remember I loved it. I just loved it because there were so many people around, and there was an unlimited supply of coffee and food and, you know, fellowship, and I was connected. And I drank a lot of years to get that. The Big Book talks about how the alcoholic is very much the actor. He presents a stage character, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. And for me, one of the biggest benefits of having a home group is somebody will see me week after week after week and I think like Stan said, or Brenda said, they'll call me on something, or I will disclose something, and pretty soon I form a bond with another person, because now they know my deepest, darkest secrets. They know the things that I am most ashamed of, and that for me is the key to staying sober. Obviously, doing inventories is one way to get this stuff out, but on a consistent basis, me connecting to another person at that genuine level is critical for my sobriety. And I can't do that if I'm always bouncing around. And, you know, I would bounce around when I was drinking because I never really wanted anybody to get to know me. Or I'd burn the bridge, or I'd do something horrific and completely unacceptable when I was drinking and would be ashamed and wouldn't want to show my face. So I got involved in service work with my home group. I was a GSR and intergroup rep, and we would pile in these cars and go to these service events. And, you know, it was the meeting after the meeting. It was the meeting before the meeting. Whatever it was 2 hours in a car with three other sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just remember being so isolated, and I just remember, you're not going to know me, you know, go to hell. But that's exactly what I wanted, was somebody to know me and love me and accept me, but it was so difficult to trust and have faith that, you know, if I showed you who I was, that you would accept me and not reject me. Because that's my biggest fear, is that if you knew all about me, you would leave me. And so that is, that was one of the benefits. Now, I came to Tucson in the early 90s after being sober for about 2 or 3 years, and you know, the guidance that I had received was get a sponsor, go to meetings, get a sponsor, of course don't drink, get a big book, and work the steps. And you know, I have somewhat of a pride problem in that I don't want to do what I'm told to do because I know better and you can't tell me nothing. Over the years, that's diminished, and I am able to take direction now, and I'm able to do it willingly because I'm just kind of tired of doing it on my own. And I've got sober experience now. I've got 22 years of sober experience that says if I just give up and let God take care of it, and I do what I'm responsible for, then phenomenal things are going to happen. And all through this book, it talks about all the different promises that are going to come true. It's not just what's on, you know, at the end of step 9. I mean, they're all over the place. But one thing that I want to bring up, and this initially was a little offensive to me, but I think it's important to bring up, and that is, it's in the back, it's on page 569, the medical view on AA. And this is a quote from Dr. Foster Kennedy, who's a neurologist. He says, "This organization of Alcoholics Anonymous calls on two of the greatest reservoirs of power known to man, religion and that instinct for association with one's fellows, the herd instinct." And, you know, I do want to belong. I want to fit in, and I want to go where we go and do what we do so that I can have what we have. And so I do go along with the herd. And, you know, I'm also cautioned to be aware that not everybody is working towards sobriety. And it's important for me to have a solid base of recovery in order to work from. And that's why I feel that my home group is the best. It's the best that I am exposed to, because we do work out of the literature, and you know, the big book is defined as it was written by people who had the problem removed to show precisely how we have recovered, is the purpose of the book. So working out of the directions, I feel that is the best way. I want to just mention what's on page 15. It's in Bill's story, and he talks about, "I soon found out that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day." And this is really about service work. This is one-on-one. This is one-on-many. This is reaching my hand out. This is, doesn't have to be anything grandiose, but it's just me working with another alcoholic and making a connection. And it talks about we commence to make fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I've seen hundreds of families set on their feet in the path that really goes somewhere. Have seen the most improbable or impossible domestic situations righted, feuds of bitterness and all sorts wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional men have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. Now, why do I bring that up? And that is just like I need to become known to my fellows, I also need to know others. And it's important for me to do that for a couple of reasons. One, it's critical for someone else's sobriety to get that out and to be that person that reserves judgment, loves the person unconditionally. And for me, you know, I had to learn what is love? What's the definition of love? And for me, love is an unconditional commitment to an imperfect person. And I'm able to apply that in so many situations, sponsees, sponsors, wife, children, parents, co-workers. I just have to remember that. And that's why it's important for me to make that connection. And I need to do that in a home group, and I've learned how to do that in the home group because service work does keep you sober, and in most cases. But service work also taught me how to be a responsible adult and how to practice these principles in all my affairs. Service work, you get on a committee and you've got all these egos and personalities to contend with. You know, yeah. It's a beautiful sight. And when I remember specifically, there was a gentleman, we were at an intergroup meeting and there was, you know, 25 people in the room and it had gotten heated. I mean, I thought somebody was going to go over the table. And the chairman calmly and professionally diffused the situation. And I was able to look at that and go, oh, wow, all right. So this thing really does work. People don't have to react with anger and violence any longer, but they can react with love and compassion and patience and tolerance and understanding, all this stuff that we hear about in meetings that we should do, there it is. It's in work, in a real-life situation. And I would not have seen that had I not been engaged in service work in my home group. So today, the Happy Destiny group is my home group. And in the big book, it talks about how the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. That defense must come from a higher power. And the thing that I want to say about having a home group, and every time that group is meeting, I'm there unless I'm out of town or incapacitated or something. I don't even have to think about it. I put it in my schedule. My wife knows that I'm going to be at my home group Thursday evening. She doesn't schedule anything, knows that if there's, you know, something going on at the kids' school, sorry, I'm not going to be there. I'll be there afterwards, but it's just that important that I go there every single time it meets. It was critical that first Tuesday that I go to that meeting on Han Air Base every single time it met, because I just couldn't stay sober that long without it. So just like that, you know, at certain times the alcoholic has no effective mental defense, I also feel that it's important that having a home group is a lot like knowing where I live. I have a home. And there are times when I find myself at home after work and I've driven home and I don't even recall the process of getting there. I'm just home. And to me, it needs to be that automatic, because at certain times I know I have no effective mental defense. So I rely on God and habit. And, you know, people, my phone number is listed so people can get a hold of me. I work with other men, and I go to meetings, treatment centers. I'm involved in the jails, and I say, you know, come find me Thursday night, 6 o'clock.